Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Welcome to The Creative Spark. I'm your host, G. Brian Benson, and today I have a really interesting guest. His name is Sean Bennett. He's a writer, workshop host, and retreat organizer based in Nottingham and London. As a former copywriter and copy editor for Oxford University Press, he brings a creative editorial eye to other people's work, usually in the context of the London-based creative writing community he leads called A Write and a Pint. He has a passion for all literature, but most specifically existential, modern, postmodern, and literary fiction. When he's not coaching people to write books, he also coaches those looking to be more creative in their careers and the purpose-led work they do. Welcome, Sean.
Hello, Brian. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate you having me on the podcast. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Yeah, Sean and I have gotten together on a few Zoom calls in the past, and we've really enjoyed connecting and kind of just sharing what each other is doing and kind of learning from each other as well. And so I appreciate you.
Likewise, it's been really, really great getting to know you, you know, just behind the scenes, as you say, and hearing about what you're up to as well. And just always a pleasure to be, you know, conversing with other creative minds. So yeah, very, very much reciprocated.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So let's just dive in. There's a lot to talk about. So many people think you can't teach creative writing. Now, I know for myself, it was kind of an unexpected discovery through a creative writing class that I had to take in college as an elective to kind of realize that I had maybe a little bit of ability in that regard. How do you approach and create a space for your clients to learn how to expand their creative writing abilities?
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear your experience there, actually, because, you know, I completely agree, of course. And whenever I've spoken to people, I guess, in disciplines outside of creative writing, you know, if they're coming from mathematics or physics or biology or something like that, they quite often look on creative writing as something that, as you say, you know, can't be taught, can't be, you know, shouldn't be in the academy, some people think. And I completely disagree with that. I think, you know, the writing spaces that I like to create are as much about, you know, reading other people's literature, you know, established authors, and dissecting different works of fiction, and, you know, seeing what's in different styles, whether it's, you know, like from the Gothic genre or the Romantic genre, or, you know, if we're reading someone like Philip Roth, we'll get a very, very different tone and style and approach than we would get if we were listening or reading Toni Morrison, for example. So partly I feel like, you know, an aspect of teaching creative writing is in reading other established works of literature, and giving people a chance to see what's there stylistically, and then you can go away and sort of try to emulate that in your own writing. The other sort of, I guess, more formal aspect of it is, if you're, I was doing a screenwriting course a few years ago with a company called Met Film in Ealing Studios in London, and I had no idea about screenwriting. It's so fundamentally different to everything else I'd ever done.
Right.
And if you don't know how to like format a screenplay,
it's a
formula. Yeah, it's like a whole set of things you have to learn to be able to do that. So, you know, you have to know when to indent if you're doing dialogue, or how to be visual in your writing as opposed to just telling somebody what's happening, because, you know, a director needs to know what it's going to look like, you know. And the same goes for poetry. You know, if you want to learn how to write a sonnet or a sestina or one of these old forms if you're interested in the history of literature. You need to really know something about those, how something's constructed, what the meter is or the rhyme scheme. And so there are all kinds of things that can be taught. And I think it's just, it's one of those things that people from the outside, they think, well, if you've got a passion for literature, you can just go ahead and write it. But I would challenge anybody who thinks that to think it's that easy. It's a craft that you could be diligently committed to for years and still have more to learn. So, I like to guess. I guess I like to create spaces where people can and meet together and do that reading together and really find out what they like in the literature they're reading before they go away and, have a go themselves.
Well, what is okay? No, I totally hear all of that, and that is that's a very interesting take for me, like creative writing. I mean, obviously there's got to be some imagination involved, right? And kids are really good at that. When they're young, they play, they create, they imagine, and they just like maybe make their own little stories. Now I know they're not going to be home, well written, but I mean, it's got to start somewhere, correct? I mean, so is it kind of a marrying of one's imagination and creative kind of just, I don't know, ideas mixed with styles and learning other people's things to kind of maybe find that balance.
Yeah, that's actually, I hadn't thought about it like that because I guess I'm mostly surrounded by people who have had the tendency to want to express themselves, in that way. So I guess there are going to be people out there that didn't have that same spark, as a child or didn't have that interest in the in expressing themselves verbally. So maybe there is, I would need to read more on that, but I think maybe there probably is, a tendency that some people have towards numerical thinking or scientific thinking, and then, other people that have that tendency towards something much more visual or abstract or literary,
Yeah, for me, I just know my brain doesn't work like yours does. You're brilliant. I mean, and you're just obviously well attuned to all these different styles, and you've read so much, and you're
Thank
way above my pay grade. And so, I mean, I totally understand and hear all this for sure, and it definitely plays a part. But like, I came from a different angle.
Yeah, okay. So, but you had that, you had a sense that you had a curiosity, a creative imagination, right, when you were a kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, it was almost just an intuitive thing, and I'm kind of an intuitive writer, and I don't know, I'll get an idea about something, and maybe a character for a kid's a children's story, and I'll just kind of start going, and most of them rhyme. So for me, it's almost, I'm not looking at it scientifically. It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle and a challenge for me, because since it's rhyming, and I want to kind of make the story work and sound reasonable. It sometimes they come quickly, sometimes they take a while. But yeah, I'm coming from Never Never Land, I think, compared to maybe the when there's we can definitely there's a place for both.
Actually hearing you say that, it reminds me something that I quite often say if I'm talking about this subject, is that I probably come from more of an angle of being an editor and a student. I'm a student of literature, so there are tons of people that come to my workshops who write more intuitively than I do, and more like they've got that pure creativity that they just love telling stories, whereas I love to go in and dissect them, and that helps when you're editing, of course, because I can see from the outside what works and what doesn't, and I can really help people on that level. But in some ways, I wish I had more of that thing that you're talking about, that sort of that intuitive, like, draw, you've just been drawn to the thing of telling those children's stories or whatever other stories you've had in the past.
Well, I think they're both very important for sure, because sometimes like myself or somebody else will just like, oh, this is great. But no, well, I mean, it's unique and it's creative, but it needs some work. But you know what I mean, to make it more well-rounded and what have you. But but I de well did were you gonna say something else?
No, just agreeing totally. I think they are both needed, aren't they? And it's fun getting people in a room with all those different inclinations or different
Viewpoints.
viewpoints and different capacities that they've got for thinking. It always brings something interesting when you get people in a room like that.
No, totally. I think, and I know you'll agree that, exploring creativity is so important for so many reasons. What's it like helping people be more creative in their works, their writings, as well as maybe just in their careers or life? I mean, do you see kind of a light bulb go on? Do you see kind of a spark initiated?
Yeah, I do quite a lot of different coaching, and so working with different people in different ways around creativity. And one of the things, maybe a route into talking about this actually is a course that I hosted last year, which was called The Book That Needs to Be Written, and it was a 6 month journey with anybody who had sort of a latent idea for a novel or a memoir or a collection of short stories that they just for some reason hadn't gotten around to writing yet. Something was getting in the way. And I'm just trying to remember why I'm talking about this. So basically, I remember on that course, there were people that were coming from all kinds of different careers. Some of them were working in government departments, some of them were freelance, some of them were, writers for a living, copywriters, some of them were teachers and so on. And along the way, on that 6 month journey, that they all had other challenges that were that were sort of appearing there outside of the writing itself. Like really difficult things happening in relationships, or burnout happening, or a bereavement somebody had they were dealing with. And so, like, chaperoning somebody through the process of writing a book when they've got all these other things going on behind the scenes is really interesting, because you see how creativity can be sort of something that buoys people in their life. It lifts them up and gives them hope, or sometimes it's something that's like just impossible to do because they've got all these other things going on in the background. So yeah, I can't remember your question now.
Well, basically, just the importance of exploring creativity, and maybe, when you're working with the people you were just talking about, like, do you sometimes noticeably see an improvement, or a spark kind of, get initiated in their life because they are starting to maybe get out of their head a little bit more and just kind of, flowing and playing. I mean, creativity can be play.
Yeah, that's it. I remember now, and I was thinking about how, when you undertake a creative project, it does really change something for people. As you say, it kind of gets them out of their head, it gets them thinking in a different way. They're creating something that is tangible. They can take this away as a memento of that occasion in their life when they were doing that. And I don't know if you, or maybe people listening, if you've ever written a journal, you can look back on that in 10 years' time or 20 years' time and see this little snapshot of who you were at the time of creating that thing. And for in terms of kind of personal development, or sort of, just feeling good about oneself, it's a huge thing, putting your time and effort into creating something like this, whether it's like, a short story collection or a poem or, a novel, or and whether you put it out into the world or it stays on your hard drive at home. I think that, just doing it is extremely important and pleasurable. And as I say, kind of looking back on it, you remember a time in your life when that thing was created, and it feels very profound, really.
It's an accomplishment. I mean, it really is. It's just no different than building a garden shed or something. You know what I mean? It's what is it? It's work, but it's more than work. It's an expression.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's where for me, because I've been, doing some writing tuition over the years, but also personal life coaching. That's where it really intersects for me when you said that about it being, a personal expression. It's like, for me, there's nothing more profound really than learning to express yourself creatively. And I think maybe if people haven't experienced that, they don't realize what kind of ripple effect that has on how you express yourself socially, or at work, or just in your love life or your family life, or
Confidence.
in your confidence. Exactly. It makes a huge difference.
Where are some times where your clients might struggle kind of as they're trying to express their inner creative self?
Yeah, I guess that's a really common, there are some common struggles, and there are obviously, ones that are really particular to individual people. But I would say a very common struggle is getting a certain portion of the way through a work and then thinking, I'm just not a writer, I'm just not good enough. It's that kind of imposter syndrome thing. And I think, possibly most people have that to some degree at some point in their life or career or creativity. But one of the things I think to remember is that it's a craft. We've talked about sort of there being a natural spark that people have when they're younger, perhaps. But the rest of it, maybe 98% of it or something, is going to be the diligence of your craft. Keeping going and emulating those styles and reading those books and seeing who you like and seeing what you want to produce and just keeping going with it, because you can't edit a blank page.
Right. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to start, and you've got to start bad as well. That's one of the things I quite like to say in my writing helps is, you've got to be bad before you can be good. So just embrace the bad, embrace the whatever comes out first, and you can always edit and play with that later.
I can certainly relate to that. I've definitely, not improved through the years, and you learn to kind of, in some ways it's weird, you obviously have heard of the term kill your darlings. And when you're starting out, it's really hard to do that. You know what I mean? Like cut out some things and make it, more honed. And, but the more I write and the further along I get, I want it to be concise, you know what I mean? And so I get rid of a lot of stuff that doesn't fit, and it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's, I don't know if that's a common thing or if that was just for me, but that's something I noticed for myself.
Yeah, and did you find it, I guess probably at the beginning, you found it quite hard, like most people do, to kill your darlings, get rid of that thing that you
Yeah, but this is
love.
so good, and I used all these extra words that don't need to be in there, but I think it'll sound good, and you know what I mean? It's, ugh. And it's embarrassing looking back, but hey, we got to do it.
And I wonder, like, sometimes you I think what I like to do for myself in that context, if there's a bit that I know I really love the sound of, but it's not complementing the wider piece that I'm trying to write, kind of take it out and put it somewhere, put it into an extra document or something. It might be something you use later for another piece. But I guess, just learning not to be afraid to cut things is definitely a kind of an art in itself.
No, I totally resonate. I actually had a line in a children's book that'll be coming out later on, and my editor said that it's a beautiful line, but it's a little too old for the kids that are going to be reading. It's like, oh, it's the best line in the book, but I ended up putting it into a poem, so it got recast.
Oh, you did. You put it into a poem
I
after that.
did.
Oh, wow. Great. Great.
Yeah, so I totally understand that one. What has your journey been like, and maybe some of the benefits that you have enjoyed from your own creative writing journey and process?
This is an interesting one for me because I've had a go at so many different forms of writing. I've attended screenwriting courses and tried to write feature length films and short films and written poems and written, reviews of poetry, and I've written a couple of novels as well. And in the process of doing all of those things, I've realized that I love the act of writing. I love being in the company of other people that are writing. But as I was saying earlier, I think I've found that my place in this sort of domain is really being other people's coach and editor and champion for their writing. So, I've done quite a lot of copywriting, for example, professionally, as you mentioned in the opening. I used to work sometimes for Oxford University Press. And that was really great fun, actually. I used to write, it was for sort of ch children's textbooks, but it was like, you get those bits that's like a fun fact or like a pretend interview between two business leaders, or like a pretend podcast transcript or a comic book or something. So I was doing all these different forms of writing for them, which was really good fun. And it was, addressed to children who were trying to better their English. So that was a really, really good feeling. And one of the books that I contributed to there won an award, and that was an amazing feeling. When it comes to sort of, I guess, pure creativity just for me and myself, I don't actually publish. So as I say, I work mainly as an editor for other people and as a coach for other people. So that's where I feel like my talents, if I have them, that's where they lie.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I mean, hey, that's we need strong, good teachers. And so, your students are and clients are very lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my gosh, it's so important. What are some of your, well, obviously that what you're doing sounds like a passion, but what are some of your other passions? What are some other things that you do you like to do that maybe kind of help contribute to who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, I think one of the things I was thinking about before this conversation actually was the different things that have gone into, who I'm being these days professionally. And one of a big interest for me at university was existential thinking, existential philosophy. And for a lot of people, maybe most people actually probably don't really know exactly what that is. So I'll just kind of explain briefly. It's like a philosophy that's concerned with ideas around time and mortality, and the meaning of existence. Why we're here on Earth, and it concerns things like the question of what it means to be free versus what it means to have responsibility in the world. And I first came across this philosophy at university, and I was reading people like the French writer Albert Camus, and the Russian novelist Dostoevsky, and people like Jean-Paul Sartre and Friedrich Nietzsche. And anyway, all these people were sort of there somewhere in the background, and I saw this philosophy as something that was very dark and cynical. And my sort of 20-year-old self was very into that.
Did you wear black too? Just
just all black every day. And it's only recently that I've revisited that philosophy, actually. I went to a coaching training, and I got a diploma under somebody called Monica Hannaway, who's a leading writer in the domain of existential coaching, essentially. And what I learned there was that she was using existential philosophy, these ideas around time and mortality and the meaning of the universe, to actually discuss with clients their sense of purpose and what they're here on Earth to do. So it suddenly had a very kind of much still very profound and very inquiring, and still of that nature of the universe and everything, but a much more positive connotation to it. So this is something that I sort of integrate into the coaching I do with people. It's like, we talk about purpose quite a lot in coaching, but from the existential standpoint, it's like, what do you mean in the universe? What does the universe mean? What would you like to create here as your meaning and in the work that you do? And I find that, you get to a much more, potentially you get to a much more profound level with people when you ask them deep questions like that, because they're not used to being
Right.
interrogated.
It's not TikTok, that's for sure.
So that's one of my passions, really.
Wow, when did that start to was that just like in your teenage years when you started kind of just exploring that? And maybe, it's not being a teenager is hard for everybody in different ways. And we probably start to kind of wonder why we're here and what's the point of everything, I suppose. And is that when it kind of started, into your
I think
mindset?
that. Oh, sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, I said just is that when basically when it started kind of entering your mindset?
I remember, being coming to the end of school, so just being around 18 years old, and not having even a single clue really what I was doing in the world or where I might go after school. And I remember traveling to the States, actually. For anybody who's listening, I live in the UK, and so when I was 18, and I traveled to the States, and it was, on the one hand, it was, wanting to see your beautiful country, and on the other hand, it was sort of me prolonging my, that question of really what are you going to do as an adult? What kind of job are you going to pursue? How are you going to set yourself up in life? And what does it all mean? It was a really, for me, it was a very anxiety-inducing thought process, really, at the time, and feeling very directionless, which, I imagine a lot of people nowadays can feel that as well, with all the options they have available, and yet nothing seems within grasp. So for me, yeah, I had that a very profound, I guess, existential crisis, really, when I came back from traveling in the States and trying to reintegrate into my life in the UK. I remember I went through therapy for years. Around 7 or 8 years, I went to coaching groups and support groups and public speaking classes. Even that was something I was terrified of, was expressing myself.
I resonate.
Which, yeah, oh, really? It's I think it's a very, very common fear, and for some people, it's kind of, really crippling and devastating. And for me, it was one of those things that spilled over into all forms of socializing. Even, I couldn't go to parties with people, or even be in meetings at work, without feeling this really intense sense of anxiety about, speaking and contributing ideas. But for me, that probably led on to what I do now, in the sense that, you can probably get from listening to me that I'm somebody who likes to put together ideas and likes to contribute them. So, it was always a sense of, maybe I do have something to contribute, and maybe I've got a way with ideas and words, but I haven't actually found my voice yet. And so for me, it just, took some time to work through that before I ended up first copywriting, then, tutoring other people, and then hosting workshops, and then, finally really bringing something into being that felt consistent with who I am.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, and I applaud you because I resonate and I stepped out of my comfort zone a lot early as well, early on, with the speech class, the communication classes and different things, just, to do the work to kind of just try to give ourselves that foundation to write, to be able to kind of step forward in different ways and to help others, what you're doing now. So, yeah.
And I think actually that last bit you said there is like, to help other people. I think sometimes if we take the sort of focus off us and put it on, what are we contributing to other people and how are we helping them, it actually makes that self-expression a little bit easier and more enjoyable and more reciprocal.
That reminds me, when I initially started doing podcast as a guest or something or a talk, I would be very, 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 very nervous. And I just kind of try to remind myself it wasn't about me, it was about sharing me. And obviously that's what you're doing now through coaching and with your clients. You're just kind of sharing you and your knowledge, and you're kind of trying to help guide them.
I might have to steal that quote from you, Brian,
Oh yeah,
because
well, it's not my quote. I heard it somewhere else. I don't know where I heard it, but you're welcome to.
that's really good. I
Yeah.
like it. Yeah,
But
perfect.
no, it sounds like you've definitely found meaning through what you do.
Yeah, I think so. For a very long time, and maybe this speaks to that last point we just both articulated. It's like for a long time I was wanting to be, I wanted my meaning to be that people would appreciate me as an individual. I wanted people to say, "Your writing's great. You're amazing." And the more I really leaned into helping other people and setting things up and creating spaces where other people could feel self-expressed, the more meaningful it felt, and the more relaxed and genuine I felt in that output. So I think that meaning that's there for me now is really in community, in conversation and relation to other people.
Oh, I love that. And I think you had mentioned to me before that your big priority for next year is building community.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. I mean, actually, it's something that I've been in conversation with some of the people in my community with recently about how to do that and what it means. And for me, we live in, I'm not going to go into like intense political discussion here, but we live in difficult times, let's say, quite fraught and tense times, and we've got a lot of stuff going on in the background, a lot of people feeling very isolated from each other, and a lot of people vying for space and combating with each other with different opinions, and I think that as a society we've drifted very far away from what we used to have in ancient tribal formations. We don't really have a kind of campfire anymore or a hearth that we all gather around and tell stories and relate to each other. We have very separate lives in some sense. We've got like a loneliness epidemic in the West, actually. I remember when when I was a kid, I used to at dinner times with my parents, we had a television set that was in the kitchen there, and we would sit and watch these two Australian soap operas. One was called Home and Away, and one was called Neighbours. Even though we were sitting there watching television and we were quiet and not talking to each other, there was still this occasion every day where we would be in the same room eating together and kind of sharing space and just being. And I don't think we have that anymore at all, really, in society. We've got people that children that don't really go out and play as much anymore because they want to play computer games. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with computer games, but there's not the same like spirit of kind of engagement with each other that we perhaps used to have. And for me, something I really, really want to create is a sense of shared space and a sense of belonging for people who want to, people that are like-minded who want to come together and share ideas. And if you're not a writer, I suppose, you could find that in cinema clubs or knitting clubs or hiking clubs or whatever. It's like that found family thing that people have where they search out the right people that can support them. And for me, yeah, it's just a response to, I guess, the world we're living in. I feel like it's very important to either seek out or create those communities for yourself.
Yes, and I mean, for writers, which is kind of a solitary pursuit, right? And personal development can be a solitary pursuit as well. And so that's probably maybe just as important, right? To form, to build community within people who are interested in that.
I don't know if I know that you write fairly, you write as part of, who you are, and some people listening might do as well. But if ever you've sat there alone writing, you can sometimes just be in front of a screen for hours not having anything to say. And you can easily get in your head there about that. But I find, and most of the people that come to my workshops always say this, the only time they feel they can guarantee they're going to feel creative and write something is when they're in the company of other people, and there's a bit of a frisson, or a kind of a bit of a, a vibe between them. And they can share ideas. That hearing other people's ideas or reading literature, it always populates the mind, I think, with imagination. So yeah, being in the company of others is, I think, invaluable.
I like that. I know for myself, I can't really, unless I have a deadline and I have to do something, I really don't want to be at home working by myself. I go to a coffee shop. Not that I talk to a lot of people, but that's where I need to have some energy around me. And that has always served me well.
Yeah, do you have we when I was doing this course last year, we called it like the writing station. Like people have their cat on their lap, or they have like a candle, a special candle they like to write with, or some people write at home on their desk, but other people, like you said there, and same for me, I have to go to a cafe. I need like some kind of stuff happening in the background.
I'm the same way. I am the same way for sure. We are, oh my gosh, this has gone so fast. We're starting to wrap things up, but I want you to tell us a little bit more about you're a write and a pint and what goes on there and how people can learn about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. So A Write and a Pint is the community that I established in London just around 10 years ago now, actually, and it's sort of had various different iterations since then. But as we speak, it's a regular monthly thing. We come together in North London in a pub called Finch's Pub. I hope they won't mind me saying that. We gather in a like a quiet sort of function room there, and we have food and drink together. We read some passages from established literature or poems, or sometimes philosophy or screenplays. Then we do, we just partake in some writing, and essentially this is like a regular enough workshop that people come back to it. We get lots of people returning, and from there, we do sometimes one-off workshops on different themes like love or friendship or obsession or shame, or all these different things. It could be anything, but it's a nice route in, I think, for people to get a grasp on a particular theme. So we do that once a month, and then we have I was going to say fortnightly, but I think that's something that only UK people say. So
Every two
something
weeks?
every 2 weeks. We have something every 2 weeks as well, which is called Once Upon a Pub, and it's a shorter workshop. It's a 2 hour workshop where people just get together after work and do again some writing on a theme. And as we speak, actually, I'm just preparing for a retreat in Glastonbury, Somerset, which is in the southwest of England. That's happening next Friday, which won't mean anything to your listeners in terms of the time, because this will go out at a different time. But yeah, I'm just preparing for a retreat at the moment, which is called To Be Continued, and it's all about people kind of beginning, a book, and then working with me in one-to-one coaching afterwards to make sure that they continue with it. So yeah, lots of different kind of projects within Write and a Pint. But p if people want to have a look at what we're up to, it's just writeandpint.com, so they can find us online or on Instagram under the same name.
Oh, fantastic. And I'll put those in the show notes too, so people can, if you know, they can check that out. But I looked at it. It looks like a lot of fun and very meaningful. And I certainly applaud all that you're doing and just all the work you've done on yourself too, because I know all, about the self-growth process. It's so important for us and for those that we interact with and connect with.
Thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's been really lovely talking to you.
Oh, this is my pleasure, Sean. Thank you. We'll definitely do it again.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Cheers.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson and all that is going on in his Creative Spark world, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself. We'll be right back.